I'm going to welcome Neil Volz, who is the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Neil, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Richard.
So glad you could join us. You're doing quite a feat, an acrobatic feat, because you're actually in an airport between flight connections, and so you made time for us, and that's great. First of all, I want to congratulate you on the passage of Amendment 4, which passed on November 6th with well over the 60% approval required for the adoption of a state constitutional amendment. Why don't you say a word about the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, for which you are the political director? When did it come together? Was it all about Amendment 4? And what have you been doing so far?
Thanks for the opportunity to talk with your listeners and raise awareness about what Florida just did and kind of how we got there and what's next and all those kind of things. We've been organizing and mobilizing around Amendment 4 for the last 6 or 7 years. And so the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition as an organization advocates for and is made up of what we call returning citizens, people like myself, the rest of our leadership who have passed felony convictions and who are not only advocating for people with felony convictions, but our families, our friends, and the communities that are most impacted by policies that discriminate against people with felony convictions. And we had a huge win on November 6th. You know, it isn't every day that you get to help dismantle a 150-year-old vestige of Jim Crow, but that's what the voters did. Ultimately, they decided that we didn't want to be one of four states that permanently barred people from voting for the rest of their life because of a past mistake. And so we took a step forward. We're really excited to see what's next.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that because that's critical. How do we implement this? You know, are there any impediments that might crop up? This often happens when there's opposition in state legislatures and at the top of the ticket there with the governor. That will certainly try to make time to talk about the strategy you have for making this a reality. Why don't you just quickly describe what the provisions are of Amendment 4? Who's included in this reenfranchisement and who is excluded from it?
So basically Amendment 4 is a very simple amendment. It says that if you have a past felony conviction and you've completed all portions of your sentence as given to you by a judge, including probation, parole, what have you, that you have your eligibility to vote restored. So there were two carve-outs, so this does not include people who have a murder conviction or a sexual felony. And so those are the carve-outs, but for everybody else, it is a very simple process that once you've completed all portions of your sentence in the state of Florida, you are eligible to vote. We're a state in which we had 1.5 million people whose voices were silent, people who had felony convictions 20, 30, 40 years ago. This obviously disproportionately impacted the African-American community and was a vestige of some old post-Civil War policies. And so, you know, we felt like it was a leap forward, but it was really done by a broad section of folks. I mean, we had, you know, the ACLU and Ben and Jerry's joining the Christian Coalition and the Koch Network to come together, along with churches and faith communities from all walks of life and all over the state, who were basically saying, look, we believe in second chances. We think this is bad policy on a multitude of levels. We don't think that the people who are impacted are able to grow completely into their communities, and we think our communities are suffering because of it.
Yeah, I think it's true that many people think the felons in Florida are all African-American, but in fact, even though they are disproportionately excluded under the felony disenfranchisement rule, they really only account for around 50% of the felon disenfranchised voters, right? So the majority are white and Latino, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There were two kind of key points that we spent years, I mean, literally years in small meetings and, you know, town halls and one-on-one conversations, just kind of framing up and letting people know, you know, who is impacted by these policies. Because there was a narrative out there that many people thought that the vast majority of people impacted were African American because there was a disproportionate impact. But like you said, it's between 28% and 33% of the people impacted are African American, majority are white, and then a large portion are Hispanic. And so it really is a cross section of the entire state. And the way we would always describe it is the cancer started a long time ago, with a certain intent. And over time, you've seen the drug wars, you've seen increase in mass incarceration, you've seen that what's happened is that something that started one way actually grew to impact everybody in the state. Every community was impacted by this in some way, shape, or form.
That's well said. I think that's so important. And to remind us about the roots of this policy or this disenfranchisement, which, as you mentioned, goes back to the post-Civil War days when Florida was confronted, when they had to rejoin the Union, and they were confronted with the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which said that now everybody had the right to vote, and the Grand High Muftis in the Florida political establishment scrambled to try to figure out a way to prevent African Americans from exercising that right to vote. And so that comes along the Black Codes, which was not just in Florida, but it was a way to put in this whole bunch of laws and, you know, vagrancy laws and other things to re-incarcerate the freed slaves and turn them into felons who would then be excluded from the voting process. So the roots go deep and they're dark. I mean, that's a pretty dark history, but it's so cool that you mentioned that, as you said, it metastasized to the point where it affected people across racial lines, and it's pretty fascinating.
And it's interesting to watch kind of that pendulum swing, because I know we got encouragement from other states who had taken the steps that we ultimately took in November before us. And while the rules and regulations of voting are state-based, you do see kind of the process in play in which kind of felon disenfranchisement has been an issue of the last 30 years in state after state after state, in which people have rallied around a single value. And the thing we said more than anything was we just reminded people that, you know what, I think deep down all of us believe in forgiveness and the idea that when a debt's paid, it's paid. No matter whether you're liberal, conservative, don't care, you know, what your ideology is, deep down we found that just people all over rallied around that. And when we started to see that states like Texas and South Carolina and Georgia had already taken the steps that we had taken, it allowed us to go into communities all across the state and say, you know what, this is just common sense. This isn't a partisan thing. This isn't something meant to be created for nefarious reasons. This is something it's about humanity. And we really just saw people gravitate to it in such a cool way.
We're speaking with Neil Volz. He's the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. He's joining us from an unknown airport somewhere.
Atlanta.
Atlanta. All right. There you go.
Yeah.
That's a comfortable place to be. So, and I also want to remind people that you're listening to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, and streaming online at WPKN.org. So, Neil, I wanted to ask you, because I think you have an interesting story to tell about your own experience with felony disenfranchisement, and a little bit about your own personal story here and how you came to be involved in the campaign based on your own personal history.
Yeah, and thanks for the opportunity to do that. And can I just say, like, you know, your radio station is a wonderful place for real debate. Like, you know, having talked to a lot of people about issues, you know, on soundbite driven conversations, like, this platform that you have is wonderful. And so I'm sure that a wonderful thing for the community, and I just hope that people are listening to you as you encourage them to call you. As it relates to my involvement in the felon disenfranchisement and Amendment 4 issue in Florida, I got a felony conviction 12 years ago. And I was at a point in my life where I had some professional success. I was actually involved in politics. I am a 25-plus year conservative Republican. I was an activist. I worked on Capitol Hill as a chief of staff for a congressman. And I got to a place in my life where I was just getting a little arrogant and selfish and greedy. And I crossed some lines that I shouldn't cross. And I got a felony conviction. And the truth is, I earned it. I you know, it was my decisions, and I had to deal with those consequences. And it really threw my life into some upheaval. I lost the ability to work in my profession. Lost my house. Got divorced, and things really began to spin out of control for me. And you know, I ended up moving to Florida. I really began to get involved in working with the homeless. I ran a homeless shelter. I'm currently the head of the Homeless Coalition in Lee County, which is where I live in Southwest Florida. And the process of working with people who were battling addiction and battling going in and out of prison and mental illness and things like that really began to open my eyes to a whole new perspective of life and how we're supposed to work together on some of these issues. Ultimately, I also had some challenges as they're directly related to having a felony. I went from having a six-figure income and a nice office to making minimum wage and working as a janitor on the night shift for 2 years. So that was a whole different kind of perspective on work and just going through the process of trying to get a job and being turned away because you have a felony conviction again and again and again. You know, my story is not as tough or as hard as a lot of other people who I've met along the way, but it definitely kind of had some of the same contours when you get that label, when all of a sudden you're living with the fact that you have a felony conviction and there's all these different kind of processes that don't necessarily allow you to fully integrate into your community. You start to wonder, like, well, you know, why can't I, you know, be fully involved? I pay taxes. And as the chairman of our homeless coalition, I'm spending millions of dollars of tax dollars, you know, and I began to wonder, like, well, you know, what is my voice? How, you know, what's the appropriate way for us to, you know, start to deal with the fact that there's a million and a half of us who aren't able to fully participate in our communities? And around that time, I was working at my church, and there was a family who we spent a lot of time with, a good friend of, family friend of mine and my wife's. There's a gentleman who allowed me to share his story. His name's Fred. Right after he graduated from high school, he was at a McDonald's in our hometown, and he found a phone right next to that drink dispenser, and he took it instead of giving it to the manager. The next day, law enforcement showed up and put him in jail for 45 days, and he had to plead out to a felony conviction. And I remember thinking, I was like, here's a young man, African-American young man, who his life has just been thrown, you know, he made a decision, and he needed to live with the consequences. But as I thought through the consequences, I was like, he just lost about half of his income for the rest of his life, at least according to the data. And I know we're not all data. And then I'm talking to his mom. I'm like, wow, so he's not supposed to be able to vote in 40 years in our state? Like, it just didn't seem to match up real well. And that was a moment in which I really was touched by the justice side of this, because I realized, I was like, if he looked like me and grew up in the suburbs, I'm not sure that the experience would have been the same. And 3 days later, I met a guy who had been leading this movement, Desmond Mead.
Desmond, I missed the last name. Desmond Mead?
Desmond Mead. So Desmond had, since about 2011, had been really, he graduated from law school, even though he had been homeless and in jail before that. And he really transformed his life. And he saw he couldn't practice law in the state of Florida because of the same felon disenfranchisement issues. So he started kind of the nucleus of what would ultimately grow into the statewide movement with the professional campaign and all that. But he started it a long time ago. And our paths collided in 2015 after my friend was going through what he went through. And that was kind of the moment that I got involved in the campaign along with Desmond. And we just traveled the state, and we were putting 50,000 miles on our car year after year after year, getting petitions collected. You know, on the one hand, it's just amazing to think about, you know, collecting 1,100,000 petitions, and the fact that it started at the grassroots with people who were dealing with a system that was broken. And the families, our families, our friends, all of a sudden, it just caught fire. And before you know it, we were at the Supreme Court, the Florida Supreme Court, because the way the Florida process works is once you get 10% of the petitions, the court rules on whether your petition is legal to go on the ballot or not. And they ruled unanimously that this thing needs to go on the ballot. And once that happened, then things really got wild, because people started donating a lot of money, and we professionalized the campaign, got paid petitioners to collect petitions, and we collected over 1 million petitions and got it on the ballot.
So I know you got to run in a minute. I want to get to this issue of what happens now, because this is a critical moment. We see some chicanery happening in Wisconsin where last-minute legislative hijinks are occurring and rules are being changed to hamper the new administration that's going to come in Wisconsin. What might happen with Amendment 4? Are there any cautionary signs that you're seeing that might pop up from the state legislature or from the governor, or perhaps through judicial challenges to the law, constitutional challenges? What do you see ahead, and how will this be implemented?
The first step is going to be that it gets enshrined in the Constitution and takes effect on January 8th. And we believe that on a very basic level, in that moment, anyone who has a past felony conviction and has finished all portions of their sentence are eligible to vote. And therefore, we will have people in all the counties going to register to vote. And we believe that people will be able to register to vote. As we walk this process out, though, I do think that there's going to need to be some statewide regulations in terms of exactly what it means to finish your sentence. And I think there will be some conversations that are already starting to take place. But as of right now, and I was born at night but not last night, so we've seen a whole lot of things play out and you know, not kind of pie in the sky. But so far, we find that elected officials they saw 65% of the public come out and support something. They see 1.5 million new voters, and they basically are accepting the contours that on January 8th, people should be able to register to vote, and leaning into a process of trying to get people registered as opposed to not. But hey, this today, you know, we're going to take this a day at a time, and we're really just focused on the families who are at the heart of this, getting people educated, getting them ready to go, sign up with their loved ones to register to vote on the 8th. And we'll take it a step at a time, you know?
If problems do come up, what can happen? I mean, because the election system in all states, because the elections are so localized and each board of elections seems to have their own system, what happens when somebody walks in to town hall and says, hey, I want to register, and then the bureaucracy there hasn't gotten the message? Well, those people, do they have redress? Will they come to your organization? Will they go to the ACLU?
Both organizations, we are talking to people and we are prepared for those steps. Mm-hmm. We're really trying to hustle to get ahead of it so that there can be, because we see, you know, many of the localities embracing the idea that people can come in and register, that we're, you know, even if there's, well, our hope is that even if there's not some sort of statewide kind of guidance, that the local supervisors of elections will all see what is very clear in the highest authority of the state, which is the Constitution. So we're prepared to kind of deal with what might come, but we're also believing that that was a pretty clear mandate. And so, you know, we want to take this thing a step at a time and just kind of give people the opportunity to do the right thing.
Well, I thank you very much for that perspective. It's encouraging. And I also want to just mention that we've been speaking with Neil Volz. He's the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which has just celebrated and will continue to celebrate this incredible victory for Amendment 4 in Florida, which restores voting rights to potentially 1.5 million felons who have served their time, paid their debt to society, and now will have the opportunity to go and register to vote and participate as full citizens in the process. So, Neil, thank you so much for making time for us. We'll definitely be following this issue and try to come back and have more conversations with you and your organization as the reality starts to come into focus in Florida.
That sounds great. Yeah, we look forward to walking it out and loving to keep connected with you. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. And talk to you soon and have a safe journey. Take care.
Okay, I appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye. Neil Volz, the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, joining us here on WPKN.